If you have a Bible with you, you'd like to turn to, very briefly, don't have to, but Colossians chapter 4, verse 5. Now, we were in a series about apologetics, that is the defence of the gospel, about giving a reason for the hope which is in us. But, when I was preparing, I did feel the Lord encourage me towards a slightly different direction, which was more about what he's made you to be and the strength that gives you in terms of speaking from your experience about the good news, about the gospel. And in particular, this was what came to mind. Now, I have no idea if any of you appreciate my car registration. And Lord just reminds me of this, brought this to mind. And that clicked a thought into place. Now, over the years, this registration plate has provoked a few interesting conversations with people along the lines of, why do you have this registration plate? Is it GNU? Is it the Flanders? Is it the animal? Is there 184? Is that something to do with your birthday or whatever? And there are answers to all those things. This turns out to be part of my history. Really, the point of this sermon is the Lord wants to use your history uniquely in terms of putting the good news about him in the cross. Your history matters. He wants to use that. He wants to use you. He wants to use your particular backstory. Now, shall I tell you now, or shall I wait till the end, why I have a number plate like this? Tell us now.
Now
or later. You vote? Now. Well, it turns out, and it's quite simple really, it turns out that that was my father's number plate. And that he only ever owned one number plate in his entire life. He bought, I believe, his first car from my grandfather. And this number plate is so old that actually it means something. The NU bit is actually illustrative of a region. In those days, and we've gone back to them now actually, in those days, every county, every particular region, where the car was registered, had a particular distinctive. The initial letter means nothing apparently, NU. I tried to look it up on the internet, I believe it's Derbyshire. Now why my dad...
Derby.
Okay. Why, presumably he just bought a car from my grandfather. My grandfather somehow bought the car in Derby. In the interwar period, I think it was a 1920s-ish number plate. I'm delighted when I go back to places like National Trust houses, and there are some vintage cars there. They have this format, three letters, three numbers like that. It is ancient, and you see it on really antique cars. Anyway, my dad, for some reason, decided that he was going to transfer that number plate throughout all his cars. And he tended to keep cars a long time, right? Buy them reasonably new and pretty much run them into the ground. So there were occasions when he would pick me up from school and I would feel slightly miffed at this slightly rusty car at times. Great car, it's a Rover, but it's somewhat rusty. But that was Dad. That's the way he was. He just liked having one or two cars, one car at a time, using it for a long time, and then buy another one. He believed in quality. Perhaps it was something to do with him being a scientist, whatever. And it seemed to me when he in fact gave me his last car because he could no longer drive it, it seemed to me it would be nice to preserve that number plate. It was something you'd grown up with, it was part of our history, it was something about my dad, and we thought that would be a good thing to hand and to keep that in the family. And we debated amongst various children who was going to get it, and I said, yeah, I'd be very happy to have this. And this is a bit of a pain, transferring a number plate, an obscure number plate, into your next car. It costs a bit, but it seems nice, and I think Ian and Alex are going to fight over who gets it, but whatever, I'm sure they'll be very disciplined about it. But that has a backstory. Whether it's interesting or not is up to you, but for me it's something about my particular setup, my particular history. And I thought God was saying that's important. He has made each of us to have that particular history, and he wants to use that, and he's going to give us opportunities. I'm going to read a little bit in a bit from this excellent book by two guys called Lee Strobel and Mark Mittelberg. Lee Strobel, you may or may not have heard of. I have heard a little bit about him. He was a reporter of the Chicago Tribune and a very award-winning journalist. He came to faith because he was trying to debunk, he was trying to disprove the resurrection. He actually went, he got very miffed, his wife started to get religious, and he got very, very annoyed by that, and that caused him to go and try and look at the gospel accounts and investigate them. And he was very much a convinced atheist and very upset that his wife was becoming religious. In the end, he gets converted through actually doing the research on the New Testament documents, on the history behind it, on reasons, various reasons to believe. So, and then he becomes a great advocate for the faith. And he wrote this book really about encouragement. It's an encouraging book. It's full of short stories of how God has provided him and his mate Mark with opportunities in everyday life just to naturally talk about Jesus, just to naturally talk from their experience. And I'll perhaps it'd be good to relate one of those stories now. But what's the context of this? Well, Colossians 4 and verse 4. This is Paul talking and asking the Colossians to pray for him. He says this: pray that I may proclaim the gospel, that is, clearly as I should. And he goes on to say this in verse 5 of chapter 4. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, that is to say, those without the faith. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. In the middle of that, there is a fascinating line here. It says, make the most of every opportunity. Now, the Greek, interesting, I don't know if it interests you, but the original Greek actually says, and some translations come up with this, that the words are make the most of is really actually buy back, redeem. And the word is used in the context of a slave market where, you know, someone is bought out. The word in Greek is begins with ex agora. Agora was the marketplace, and I believe what it's like, ex agoromenai. I buy back, redeem, completely take out. And the other word is not so much opportunity, that's the way it's translated here, but it says, the word is in Greek is kairos, which means, in a sense, time, in a sense, season, in a sense, you know, time or season, opportunity means a special term. So what Paul is saying is, you know, life goes on, life ticks away. But actually, there are moments, there are divine opportunities that God gives you to be able to use a conversation, use a circumstance for him. And in a sense, you can take that normal time, you can buy it out, you can somehow redeem it, you can make use of it in a supernatural way. So redeem the opportunity, the kairos. Redeem the possibility. I don't know about you, but there are moments where you just sense God is giving you that chance to say something significant. God has prepared you for that through your background, through your particular hobbies, your particular interests, your story, maybe your family background, your relations, your workplace, your interests. He has made you you, and he has given you that particular opportunity which just causes your soul to lift and a sense of excitement to come into your bones. And it's something that Lisa will very much talks about. The unexpected adventure. It's an adventure. And I don't know about you, but sometimes your pace, your pulse just quickens. You think, ah, God actually wants me to say something at this point. And that is. I'll just read you a little bit from Lee's book to illustrate that point. And he says the following. He was out with his family actually buying pizza, or getting pizza in a restaurant. And the waiter comes up to him and says the following slightly surprising words. Let me know, said the waiter, if you have any questions, as he leaned against the pillar in our out-of-the-way section of the popular restaurant. And that particular phrase, let me know if you have any questions, somehow struck Lee. In the sense that this wasn't questions about pizza, this was any questions. Any questions. Anyway, Lee had been studying as part of his church ministry philosophy of religion and various other things. And he'd been reading Immanuel Kant. Now, I haven't, I think, Colin has. Maybe a few of you have. I certainly have been read more than a few summaries of Immanuel Kant, the heavy duty philosopher. So this fascinates me, who's really struggling with this, because actually even reading paragraphs are quite tough. So he said, so in his Sense of Humour, Lee says the following: "I've been reading Immanuel Kant, and I was wondering," I asked, with feigned curiosity, "do you think that the categories of the mind apply to the noumenal world in the sense that they apply to the phenomenal world?" Brackets. I was fairly sure I knew what I was talking about. At any rate, I felt safe that he wouldn't know one way or the other. He looked at me. This is the pizza restaurant waiter. He looked at me surprised. Then he smiled and shot back with a spirited tone. "I'm not sure, but I once heard about a scientist who looked through his telescope and thought he saw God. Pretty strange, huh?" "That's not at all strange," I said, amazed at his response. Complete. No link between those two things. But "I don't know if this was the guy you heard about, but I recently read a really interesting book by a well-known scientist called Robert Jastrow called God and the Astronomers. It was his observation of the incredible order and intricacy of the universe that led him to finally conclude there must be a God. His book shook up a lot of people in the scientific community." "Wow, that's interesting," the waiter said. "I really don't think about God too much. What did you say the name of the book was?" And so it goes on. So, Lee Strobel's Sense of Humour, taking the question very literally, the open chance to ask any question in the universe, takes it up. The particular fact that he happened to be reading a bit of philosophy at the time and posed this ridiculous question, and then the fact that also in part of his reading, he knew about the scientific background, the links between science and the universe, and really the nature of that in terms of God. The fact that, yeah, there are these extraordinary buckets, coincidences, about the way our universe is constructed, that every scientist, particularly physicist, has to really confront, that it looks like a complete put-out job, that you have to adjust the parameters of the universe to incredibly fine precision to get life at all. In fact, life is probably so unlikely that most people, Brian Cox included, reckon they're probably, contrary to what you might read, there's probably no life in the entire Milky Way apart from our good selves. And that is in 100,000 million stars. Life on this planet is so unusual and requires so many things to come together to get life. We have to be exactly the right distance from the sun or within certain bounds. Our sun has to be the right place in the galaxy, and so it goes on. That would be a whole other talk. Anyway, Lee knew about that and was able to recommend this particular book, so it falls into place. So, I suppose really the question is this: you know, what has God given you? And the encouragement really from Lee is to say he's given you something already. He's given you a particular set of interests, a particular character. Think about your own character. Maybe it's your sense of humour. Maybe it's an interest. He's given you those particular things to use in a very natural way. And I think that's the encouragement, is that it's a natural thing. It wasn't hard for Lee to produce a quirky reply. That's just how he was. And for you, there'll be something very natural in terms of your background, in terms of your interest. Maybe you just like to think, well, maybe ask God now, or indeed pray for yourself, pray for the person quietly next to you. Just be thinking, what has God already given me in terms of my interests? Is there a particular hobby? You know, why do you do the things you do? Why do you have the particular hobbies that you have? What is it that thrills you? Is there an opportunity in those terms? Or maybe it's a particular set of relationships or background or friendships. Thursday night, I was not fellowship group. I was down the pub. And I was down the pub for a very particular reason. And that particular reason was our offices where I work, the Institute of Physics in London, happens to be moving from its current location in 80 Portland Place over to a new location near King's Cross, 37 Caledonian Road. You're very welcome to drop in. It's got an exhibition area, just a bit of coffee there as well. Do drop in, quite close to King's Cross Station. And it was felt that this move required us to say farewell to our local pub, because it's the place where, if anybody leaves the Institute, that's the formal speeches, but then we go around after work to this particular pub called The Masons, and we say goodbye and have a big chat, and various staff turn out, and there's an upstairs room and it serves nice Thai food and various things. People are very attached to The Masons. And again, it seemed wrong for me not to join my colleagues at this farewell to The Masons bash. And I thought, yeah, it would be crazy just to go home and say, no, no, too busy, got fellowship group. And that would be daft, because it's a great chance to talk to your colleagues about anything, but also there's the possibility you might be able to talk a bit about the Lord. And I had a colleague, a younger colleague, who works for me very occasionally, he works about a tenth of his time for me, who I got on well with. Turns out, this chap who I've hit it off with has a number of things in common. He is still trying to wrap up his PhD thesis after a number of years. So myself, in terms of me writing up research, we occasionally exchange notes about that. So that's one thing we have in common. He is very musical, he plays the French horn, and he also participates in choirs as well. And he's actually come out to Missenden once to attend a concert. So we've talked about that in the past. He went to an Alpha course when he first came to London, which he didn't actually get on too well with. He felt a little bit kind of got out there, but we've been able to discuss that. I was able to lend him a book about Jesus in terms of Middle Eastern thought, Jesus through Middle Eastern eyes. So over the years, we have found we've got quite a lot in common. He's a lovely guy, very hard work. And so it wasn't difficult on Thursday night to talk to him and say, you know, how have you been getting on? I remember some time ago, didn't you go on an Alpha course? I mean, have you had any more thoughts on that? And that just led to a whole conversation about where he was at and his thinking. And it was great just to be able to talk for 20 minutes about, you know, our particular journeys. And then it was natural for me to share about how I came to faith, because he started a very atheistic background. He went through some traumatic surgery. He says he's much more open now to a non-materialistic view of the world. And that just seemed natural to talk to him about the fact I, as a teenager, had been brought up in a Christian home, but for me, science and Christianity made sense, that Christianity was a better explanation of the world than a humanist explanation. For me, there were a series of things that stacked up, and particularly for me, the evidence about the resurrection was really important. That I'd read a really great book when I was about 16 on how Jesus must have risen from the dead, because all the other explanations of where the body could have gone to just don't really add up. And he listened with interest and politeness, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I'm boring you. No, I'm fine. So he, you know, we checked all out. And that was great. And it just seemed natural because he talked about him. And again, I suppose I just encourage you. You know, God gave me a lot in common with this guy in terms of research, in terms of music, in terms of interest, in terms of background. He has a logical approach. He's a physics stroke maths kind of guy. We had a lot in common, made it perfect to be able to talk on a Thursday night at this goodbye to the Masons bash. And I suppose that's really just the encouragement for you, just to think, what's God given you? What have you already got? He will make you, he will give you natural conversational opportunities that will arise. And I suppose just to be confident in that, to be a bit zany, to be a bit yourself in terms of what you do. And from that will flow natural conversations where people can, you know, you can talk about yourself. Many of us find it hard to talk about our faith. It's a very personal thing, perhaps. But in a sense, things which you do feel comfortable about, God can put those to centre stage. That, I think, is really it. So, the number plate. That's really a one-point sermon. What is the equivalent of your number plate in terms of your background, your experience, your hobbies, the things that delight you, the things that interest you? Why do you like music? Why do you like craft work? Why do you like digging? You know, what is it about digging the garden that really blesses you? Well, you know, that's from the heart of God. So, or whatever, for me, digging doesn't. Yeah, but what is it that blesses you? Can you talk about that? Can that be something that you can bring into the conversation? Or is it an opportunity to talk to a fellow gardener, or a fellow craft maker, or a fellow glass blower, or whatever it is that particularly interests you? Because if you're speaking out of your heart, God can use that. Because he's put those things within you. He has made you to be uniquely you. So let's use that. As Colin Putt, know, in terms of spiritual gifts, if you've got a particular spiritual gift, if you're diligent in leading, then lead. If you're diligent in cabbage growing, then grow cabbages to the glory of God. It's not for me, but you know, that's the thing to do, isn't it? So, using what you've got, using what God has given you. I would thoroughly recommend this book. I've been waxing lyrical about it to various people. Sorry, mate, that was your... That was a fine collection, I think. But there's another one here too, I could do that trick again. No, I won't do that. So yeah, so that's really it. Be confident, God's made you you, that's no mistake. He wants to use you naturally, he will help you to be natural. I think the thing is, just buy back the time. There is an opportunity. It's like you can buy out that bit of time, you can redeem it, you can take that opportunity and use it significantly. And it will be natural. It will make sense. It will happen. And then it's terribly exciting when that does actually happen, when you have that chance. As Lee says, and certainly it's my experience, when you've been able to... Natural Evangelism Course by J. John. There we are. How about that? We've even got a book on it. So, Colin, what's the status of this book? Borrow, buy. We're going to get more of these.
We can get more of those.
Yeah. So that's it, really. Okay, so can we pray? Have we got time to pray? Is that okay? I'd just like you to pray for, really for yourself, but also for the people next to you, as we did earlier. Just pray quietly now that God will do certain things. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you have uniquely given us our own particular story, our own particular backstory, our own particular number plate, as it were. You made us uniquely ourselves. Lord, we would just pray that you would bring to mind now opportunities. You would encourage us, help us to be confident that our interests, our attributes, our likes and dislikes, you can use each of those. Lord, encourage us in confidence that we can use these everyday things in conversation. Help us to be thinking, perhaps, and about those, thinking about opportunities. Not in a way that freaks us out, or not in a way that makes us feel guilty, but just that we can naturally have the confidence to talk about you through what we do, through who we already are. Will help us to take the opportunities when they're right. Help us to buy back the time. Help us to use the moments, to use the conversations, to use those opportunities when they come up. Help us to have the courage to then speak about you, about what you made us, about what you said to us, about our own particular experiences. Lord, you know, some of us find this really hard, and perhaps some of us find it easier, and that's the way we are. Help us to encourage each other. Help us to know that you made us ourselves, and that's not a mistake. Pray for each of us to give us great courage, great opportunities, and excitement that there's an adventure to be had. The answers for ourselves, the answers for each other. And look, there, I mean, relatives, particular friendship circles or relatives, work opportunities, other things, like play groups, whatever, that you would help us to be creative in the use of those as the days go forward. And help us to do this together, Lord. Help us to encourage each other. As I've been encouraged by this book, help us to encourage each other. We know that you give us each other for the purposes of encouragement. Help us to receive that and help us to give that. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Now I'm going to ask you what you'd like to do next. I have a video of Ravi Zacharias who was answering a question that we've had asked of us in the last, well, certainly 6 months. And we can either have a look at this video and hear what is a very compelling and confidence building approach to answering a particular question. And it's not for everybody to know the answer to this question, but it's great to know. It's a bit like the AA, you know, I know a man who can, that kind of concept. Or we can worship to conclude the service. So I'm going to ask you, what would you like to do? Would you like a short video, or would you like to worship? What would you like to do? Would you like to hear an inspiring video, or to sing an inspiring video? Okay.
My question is, since the Bible has been scientifically disproven as far as all the claims, you know, theory of evolution, archaeology, you know, Noah's Ark, Adam and Eve, since we know this didn't happen because of our science nowadays, my question is, how do we have, according to the Bible, how do we have free will if God is this omniscient being that knows everything about us, everything we will do, and he pretty much knows our outcome before we're even created, so he creates us knowing everything we'll do. Since we can't surprise him by our actions, we have no free will. Our choices have been predetermined, and that the act of judgment is completely immoral because he knows what we're going to do. Nothing can surprise him. That's a question.
Thank you for the question, and before you go into an auditorium, if you give a sheet of paper and ask us to write 20 possible questions, that'll come. We've never heard a new one in all of these years that go by. They're pretty much the same questions. It's interesting that you began by saying, as an atheist, all of this has been disproved, and so you live with scientific materialism as your worldview. I studied under John Polkinghorne at Cambridge University. You probably know the name. One of the world's leading quantum physicists, who came to exactly the opposite conclusion you did, while being the dean at Queen's College, Cambridge, as a quantum physicist, taking the same data you did. So obviously, for a man of his intellectual ability to come to a different conclusion, one would either have to say he's totally stupid to come to that conclusion, or else his empirical basis. Please don't keep shaking your head. Let me finish so that you can come and talk afterwards. So he allows to concentrate what we're saying here. I want to read for you what David Berlinsky says about the scientific naturalistic worldview. Do you know who he is? One of the world's leading physicists, who is an agnostic, borders on atheism, but took issue with Richard Dawkins's book, The God Delusion, and wrote a book called The Devil's Delusion. Here's what he said. Has anyone ever provided proof of God's inexistence? Not even close. Has quantum cosmology explained the emergence of the universe, or why it is here? Not even close. Have the sciences explained why our universe seems to be fine-tuned to allow for the existence of life? Not even close. This is Berlinsky talking. Are physicists and biologists willing to believe in anything as long as it is not enough, not religious thought? Close enough. Has rationalism and moral thought provided us with an understanding of what is good, what is right, and what is moral? Not close enough. Has secularism in the terrible 20th century been a force for good? Not even close to being close. Is there a narrow and oppressive orthodoxy of thought and opinion within the sciences? Close enough. Does anything in the sciences or in their philosophy justify the claim that religious belief is irrational? Not even in the ballpark. Is scientific atheism a frivolous exercise in intellectual contempt? Dead on. Now, I didn't say that, all right? I'm not quoting myself. Please give me your name, sir. Ethan? Ethan, what you're wrestling with is not uncommon. Many people from a scientific and materialistic worldview will say what you've said and come to that conclusion. The problem is what you mispositioned was your concern between determinism and free will. Your application could have gone in many different directions, but you came to that one for some reason, which I was unfortunate, I think. At Cambridge, I listened to a talk at the Lady Mitchell Hall in 1990 by Stephen Hawking. As you know, he can't speak, he uses a speech synthesizer. His whole talk was on determinism and freedom. And you know what he concluded? That the tragedy with scientific materialism, if we take its assumptions, is that we are not free, we are totally determined. That was the world's leading physicist at that time saying, the very thing you're asking of the Christian faith, he pinned on your backs. A scientific materialist. You can go right online and trace it. Lady Mitchell Hall, 1990, somewhere around March, April, May, at that time, I was attendance. And he said, The only escape I have is, since I don't know what has been determined, I may as well not be. The whole auditorium moaned and groaned with an escape hatch that he gave for himself after telling us that we were completely determined. That's Berlinsky's issue. That is actually even what people like Dawkins will concede, or Pinker, you read Steven Pinker and the others. So totally determined. So the question is, were you free to ask this question? Yep.
I don't believe any of us actually have free will, because we are strictly material.
So you're actually, as a machine automaton, asking me this question?
We are all made up of our past experiences.
Okay, but you're not free then. You're not free. You're not making a truth statement.
My truth statement. I mean, what I'm saying is, our memories and our states...
No, hear me carefully. Yeah. If you're totally determined,
yes,
you're pre-wired to think the way you do.
Nature versus nurture.
Sorry?
Nature versus nurture.
Nature versus nurture.
Yes.
Regardless, the nurture may provide a different environment, but the nature is, you're hardwired,
yes,
to come out to the same conclusion. Out of flux, nothing but flux. You know, what you put into the computer, ultimately it's going to come out. But you have to ask yourself, are you making a truth claim? If you are making a truth claim, you're rising above the bondage of total subjectivity. And the moment you claim a truth claim, you're violating determinism. And so I just leave you with that. And let's meet afterwards. Hey, Ethan, we want to chat with you. You know, you're the kind of guy we come here for. So afterwards, you come here and we'll chat with you. Come here, give me a shake, Anthony. Bless you, Lord. Thanks, buddy. Thank you. You know, I live in a condominium where there's so much noise that sometimes goes on, and I phoned the property manager and said, you know, when I write, even the sound of anything distracts me. And so she said, play some music. I said, what? So that's why I'm sorry if I checked you on the shaking of the head. If I get distracted, I can't stay on track, you know, so my apologies on that.
And that, I hope it illustrates how the questions that people have can be answered. Really, you know, his backstory answers that person's questions. And it's for us to make the most of every opportunity, to redeem the opportunities, as Chris was saying.